It's been an awfully long time, but I'm delighted to get my next guest on because it's been a very long time since I've seen him. Weapon were the support band, amongst any many other things that they were. They were support band on the Ace Up Your Sleeve tour. And some cassettes have recently come to light that captures the band in its finest. Delighted to be joining me live on the line from Sweden, the voice himself, the man behind Weapon and several other bands, which we'll get onto a bit later, Danny Hines. Danny, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Giles, from sunny Stockholm.
And congratulations, because I know you've been following the Euros from the safety of your couch, and it looks like another victory for the Swedes.
Yes, a good one, thank God. Let's see how far we go with them.
Yeah, indeed.
I can't support my own country, the Republic of Ireland, because unfortunately we're not in this tournament. But so my adopted country, Sweden.
Yeah, I mean, How long have you been living over there with this? You know, in Scandinavia? Because we got several Scanda hooligans listening in on most Fridays. So, when did you move over to Sweden?
2007, the end of 2007. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell me a little bit about what you've been up to, and a little bit about, you know, Weapon, because a lot of people may remember Weapon just vaguely, but, you know, that sort of new wave of British heavy metal, you're pretty much up there in the front with the rest of them.
We were indeed to start with. I mean, we were very lucky from, you know, we formed in March of 1980, Jeff and I, and within 6 months, we'd had a major publishing deal with Virgin Publishing. And, of course, we got the Motorhead tour, which was phenomenal. You know, 32 dates around the country, 4 nights at Hammersmith Odeon. It was, you know, everyone's dream.
And was it a case that you literally did the old school way and just put an advert saying you were looking for a band?
Yeah, in Melody Maker, the old Melody Maker. I was looking for a band, and the same week Jeff had put an advert in looking for a singer, and I had to audition, which I got through very well. And the band then was called Fast Relief.
Right, okay.
Not exactly a great name.
No, and so when did you decide to become Weapon, and what was why the name changed? Well, I know why the name changed, but who came up with that one?
Well, we've done several rehearsals. I think we've done one gig with the original lineup. And we've done a showcase for Virgin Publishing. And I wasn't keen on the bass and drummers. You know, they're lovely guys, but it just didn't feel right for me. And thankfully, Virgin taught the same thing. And so we discussed that. We said, a new rhythm section in. Jeff knew Bruce very well, so he called him in. And of course, I knew Baz and worked with Baz in Birmingham. Baz, who sadly passed away last November 16th.
Right.
So anyway, we got the guys in for an audition or just a play around, and just it clicked immediately. And then we said, well, we have to change the name because, you know, Fast Relief is a dreadful name. Sorry, Jeff. Anyway, a friend of mine, Bob Sayer, who played in Iron Maiden and Praying Mantis and Weapon for a very short period, always used the expression, when he thought something was really good, he would use the expression, "Ah, that's Weapon." So I thought, that sounds like a good name. So I put it to the guys, and of course, you know, we took up it and became Weapon in May of 80.
And you became, I mean, you signed a worldwide deal with Virgin. I mean, so they must have liked you, because it's not every band that, you know, came up on that sort of, that new British metal wave and got signed immediately to somebody like Virgin.
No, we were very lucky, you know, and, you know, Virgin Publishing was a great label to be on, a great company to be with. You know, we didn't get a huge amount out of them, but that didn't matter. You know, the thing was, they were there to support us when we were offering the Motorhead tour. So
yeah, I mean,
financially,
so,
they
so you did. I mean, you were doing a showcase gig, and did you know that Eddie Clarke was going to be in the audience? Or I mean, were you a member?
No, I didn't actually. No, it was at Virgin's. Virgin had a place called The Venue in Victoria. It was an old cinema turned into a nightclub stroke rock venue. Right. Not rock venue, just music venue. And we were just doing a gig there, and when I came off stage, a friend of mine, Hillary, was a friend of Eddie's, and she'd brought him down to the gig, and he really liked what we were doing, you know. And said, "Oh, you know, I'll have a word with the guys here to get you on the tour." And of course, we've heard that so many times, you know, get you on this tour, get you on that tour, different bands. And thankfully, he came through, and the guys were interested. So we put on a showcase for them at the Camden Palace,
right,
on Music Machine. And unfortunately, during the day, we'd had a lot of problems within the band. You know, you get bitchy and blah, blah, blah. Had too much to drink.
Right.
And the band broke up. just before we went on stage.
Right.
"I'm not playing with you again, blah, blah, blah." Excuse me. Anyway, we went on stage full of aggression and, you know, played brilliantly because we didn't give a shit what happened. And, you know, I had a bit of an incident with a guy who kept hitting the front of the stage and coming very close to me with a pool cue.
Right.
Which I took off and hit him over the head with.
As you do, yeah, yeah.
And anyway, as you do, you know, my aggression, me being a paddy. And anyway, we come off stage and Lemmy said, you know, any band that has that contempt for their audience has to tour with Motorhead. So we got signed for the tour.
So if you want to play if you want to play with Motorhead, hit one of the audience with a pool cue, and that'll get you signed, basically.
It's a good opener, you know. It's a good start.
So had you met Motorhead before in various incarnations? Had you been aware of them sort of in the 70s in the UK?
Well, I obviously knew of them. I'd never met anyone. I'd met Lemmy briefly. That's a funny story, actually. I was then in a shoe repair shop just off Portobello Road, and Lemmy was in there. He only had one pair of shoes,
right,
a pair of white boots. This is how broke he was. And he was standing there with one shoe on while the guy repaired the other one, and then they swapped over. So I met him very briefly. But when we were offered the tour, I thought, you know, geez, you know, do I really want a tour with Motorhead? I mean, it had this kind of image, particularly Lemmy, you know, this aggressive, you know, image. And I thought, and then I thought, their audience will hate us. Because, yeah, you know, although we were playing stroke heavy metal, new wave, you know, we had quite a melodic tracks we were playing. And I thought, you know, we'd die a death. And I thought, oh, what the fuck, you know, let's go for it.
Yeah.
What have we got to lose?
I mean, what was it? I mean, because Motorhead were massive. This was the Ace of Spades tour, and I mean, they were everywhere. This is their anthemic song, and of course, it culminates in No Sleep Till Hammersmith, one of the finest sort of live rock bands rock albums ever put out. So, what was it like that first? Where was the first night, and what was it like?
Well, I mean, as you said, it was the biggest tour ever. I mean, it's the biggest tour for any band in that era. You know, 32 dates. It's just unbelievable. And four sellouts at Hammersmith Odeon. But the first night was in Ipswich Gourmand. And I remember we turned up in the afternoon and, like, you know, young boys, a little bit sort of, you know, naive. And they were sound checking, and I went to the back of the theatre to listen to them. And when Lemmy hit the, you know, his bass, I felt physically sick, the sound out of it. So, and I'm right at the very back of the theatre. I thought, oh, Jesus Christ. But, you know, it was loud. And then we, you know, got to meet them and formally. Now, I tell a lie, actually. We actually went to their dress rehearsal first.
Right.
I think it was in Shepparton. That was the first time we met them, the whole band. And the crew, and, you know, it's very important to me, as I know from experience, always be nice to the crew of the main headline band. You know, be nice to them, you'll get away with anything. And I seem to remember we bought them all a drink in the bar.
That would work.
So that was a good start for them. You know, that worked. And I have to say, the crew as well as the band were just so kind to us, you know, to really treat us with the utmost respect.
I mean, this is the thing. I mean, people seem to think that Motorhead were this sort of terrible force of nature. But, I mean, I read White Line Fever, which is Lemmy's autobiography, whilst I was ill, because that's the sort of thing you do. And he's intelligent, and when he passed away, Lemmy, I mean, you know, if you see the Dave Grohl tribute to him at the eulogy, it's absolutely touching.
Yeah,
and everybody loved him. I mean, everybody absolutely loved him. And Eddie Clark was down here for a while. He passed away recently. I didn't meet Filthy Animal, but who knows? But they were really professional guys, and they didn't, you know, whatever happened, they went on and they put a show on.
And you say the image, which is great. It's great to have that kind of image. But, you know, behind the scenes, they're really a nice bunch of guys, you know. They had their off nights, particularly Filthy. He could be a nasty little shit sometimes. You know, but not to us. Not to us. In particular around the hotels. There's lots of stories I could tell you about the hotels and blah, blah, blah. But, as guys are great, you know. Really, really were.
How old were you, by the way, Danny, when you were doing the you know, that whole Ace Up Your Sleeve tour?
We were all around 2021.
Oh, blimey. Blimey indeed. And so you were a bit worried about them being worried, you know, about them liking your music. I mean, I did play Set the Stage Alight, and that sounds, you know, that's something that, you know, Motorhead would be happy to play. So what was reaction from, you know, as the warm-up? Because it's a difficult place, isn't it, being the warm-up band for especially a Motorhead?
You say that again. But again, you know, we've done really well. Actually, thinking back on it, and I heard the cassettes you talked about earlier, when I listened to it, we actually sound like a punk band. You know, we're up there with Motorhead in as much as the speed and the energy we had.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of our songs were quite melodic and still are today. But in the situation where you're in front of 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 people a night, you know, and you're young and you're full of energy, you play a little fast and the songs come across, you know, a lot heavier and more energetic, you know.
Yeah. So what was it, I mean, as the tour went on, did you realise, was it kind of building up to these four sold-out nights in Hammersmith? And what was it like walking out on a venue like, because you're a new band, you're 20 years old, you know, you're walking onto one of the iconic rock venues in the UK, if not Europe, of the world. I mean, must have been a little bit, you must have seen a few Hail Marys behind the stage before you went on.
A few Jack Daniels. I mean, it's every guy's dream. But, you know, I have to say, before that, going on stage at the Glasgow Apollo, man, that's just like, because that's a weird venue. You know, the stage is on level with the first balcony. It's a very strange thing, and the balcony's moving. And that was just a look out and see that, Jesus Christ, man, this is unbelievable. And then to go to Hammersmith Odeon and walk on stage there, it's just... an incredible feeling. It's very hard to express, you know.
Yeah.
It was an incredible feeling. And to have four sold-out nights is just, you know.
And to have them like you.
Oh, this is the great thing. I mean, I had probably one or two incidents in the 32 dates where, you know, you get the odd mouthy guy in the audience.
Yeah.
One in particular, I think, was in... I'm pretty sure it was in Leicester. I mean, this guy was relentless. He wouldn't stop. So I had to leave the stage to join him in the audience. And which the rest of the audience loved.
So, did you have a pull cue handy?
I think there's something about being a Motorhead, or, you know, playing in the Motorhead, to a Motorhead audience, that, you know, brought out an aggression in me. That's not normally there, because I'm quite a placid guy.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a picture that's been doing the rounds of Lemmy with a broom on stage with you guys during the Hammersmith gig? But what was Lemmy doing with
the last night at Hammersmith? Yeah, and you know, we'd never seen them until the album came out, the 40th anniversary.
Yeah.
Thankfully, BMG sent me both. What's the first one? Ace of Spades.
Yeah.
And then No Sleep to Hammersmith. But in the No Sleep to Hammersmith, they've done 2.5, 3 pages, an interview I done with them. and those photographs come up in there, and we'd never seen them before. And it's just it was brilliant. And I brought back memories of the night because, you know, we're in the middle of a set the last night, and, you know, big evening for us. And so the Lemmy's on one side and Phil's on the other with brooms sweeping around us like, this way. Come on, lads, it's over now. Get the fuck out of here. But we returned the favour when they were on with the old custard pies. The city schoolboy stuff.
What was the after party like after the last gig of the Ace Up Your Sleeve tour? I mean, can you remember it and can you repeat it?
Well, immediately after, you know, the shows, we'd always adjourn to the bar at the Odeon.
Yeah.
But then the proper after show party was held at the Clarion. And I vaguely remember. there was a lot of booze consumed. And I have to tell you a story. During the tour, the first two nights, Ipswich and Aylesbury, I was a little bit tense going on stage, you know, because I was trying to be serious and, you know, not get drunk,
yeah,
have any alcohol before I went on. And Lemmy watched me on the second night, and then I was called to his dressing room and said, you know, man, you need to loosen up a little bit. You're taking it all too serious, which I was. And, you know, he said, you need to just loosen up, you know, and enjoy it. I thought, oh, okay. And then he gave me a large Jack Daniels. I never drank Jack Daniels before. I used to drink vodka.
Yeah.
So I, you know, nicked that, you know. And that was my routine then every night on the tour. I'd be brought down there and I'd be given my medicine before I went on stage.
If you're going to start drinking Jack Daniels with somebody, I suppose Lemmy's not a bad person to give you your first Jack Daniels.
Not at all. It was good medicine anyway.
Well, I mean, afterwards, I shouldn't be speaking to you, really, because Weapons should be like this huge band now, you know, ranked with the rock gods. What kind of happened after that, then?
Oh, man. We come off the tour, and, you know, the record, not the record company, the management we had, called Smart Management, or I can tell you anything but smart. a nice couple of guys, you know, they didn't really have a clue about us. They'd been holding out for a record deal, you know, they were getting offers, and they'd been holding out for a record deal, which they obviously held out too long, because once Maiden took off, every label wanted a band.
Yeah.
Every major company wanted new wave of heavy metal band. And they just kept holding out, and of course, in the end, other bands were signed in place of us. One example was Atlantic Records. It was between us and a band called Moore. And our guys kept holding out, and eventually they signed Moore. And that was kind of the end of it. And then they didn't have any work lined up for us, apart from a very small tour.
Yeah.
I think it was 7 or 8 day club dates, which was cool, you know. Great to get back out, you know, as headline act. But what they should have been doing was, you know, get us on another major tour and sign a record deal, and then, yeah, things would have been different. But, you know, that's the way it goes. There's 1,000 bands,
yeah,
tell you the same story.
And I mean, if you had become massive, I would never have had the pleasure of seeing you live every Sunday pre lunchtime at the Swan in Fulham, of course.
This, of course, is true. I'd probably be in Marbella sunning myself.
Exactly. You would be throwing me out of your rock star mansion. Tell me, just because, for those, I tell this story now every time again, because before I even knew that we met on Facebook, which is one of the greatest things of social media, Danny, to actually get back in touch with you, I must admit, because for those who don't know, there was a bar called The Swan in Fulham, and every Sunday lunchtime, and this is back in the day when pubs shut at 2 o'clock, we used to go down, a group of us, to blow our cobwebs away along with us to this place called The Swan on the Fulham Broadway, and Paddy Goes to Hollywood would play, and it would absolutely set you up for the afternoon.
Hollyhead, excuse me.
And this was the first time I ever heard a rock version of Does Your Mother Know?
they were good days. That was known as the Hangover Club, they called it.
Yeah, was it ever? And the other thing, just quickly, I'll remember before we go back onto Weapon, was the fact that one day they kicked you off and they didn't tell us. So we went down expecting to see Paddy, and there was this bleeding awful three-piece sort of like bald-headed blues band. And you basically, I remember you being in the pub across the road, and we were like, "What's going on?"
Ah, that's right. Yeah, they had a bit of an argument with the new tenants.
Yeah,
and they pull the plug on it. We thought, okay, we'll find somewhere else. And we did. We found the bottom line in Shepherd's Bush.
Yeah.
So what we did was we stood outside the pub, the Swan,
yeah,
telling people that from next Sunday we'll be at the bottom line. And then we went across the road, as you say, to the pub and got pissed.
Absolutely. And also, the last time I saw you, I thought anything coherently, I think, was watching you guys in St. Patrick's Night in the bottom line, which was a gig and a half. I didn't serve it for 3 days afterwards. Tell me a little bit about, in a good way, tell me a little bit about then these tapes coming up. And also, obviously, because you've been touring, you've been doing other stuff, Weapon UK or Weapons got back together and was doing some good stuff before, obviously, all this coronavirus stuff hit.
Yeah, it's a real pissy. I mean, we've released two albums, Rising from the Ashes in 2014. Me and Jeff got back together. We got together in 2005 to do the Headbangers Ball in Germany with the original lineup, Baz and Bruce. And it went really well. And we had a conversation and shall we try and do some recording? And me and Jeff were up for Baz. Unfortunately, had an illness which stopped him from touring. And if he's not going to tour, he didn't want to record.
Mm.
And Bruce had been playing with Andy Scott Sweet for 20 odd years and is still with him. So Jeff and I got together and we said, oh, well, let's see what happened. And then we got together again then in 2010. We said, let's do some recording. So that was the beginning of the album from Rising from the Ashes. We released Ready for You in 2011, finished the album with a different rhythm section who are no longer with us. Released Rising from the Ashes 2014, done a bit of touring with that, and then we got another rhythm section in, which is the current one, which is Darren Lee on drums and Tony Forsythe on bass, and done Ghost of War, and everything is going cushy, lots of work and all that, and of course this bloody pandemic hit us, and that's like, well, our last gig was in Stockholm on the 19th of October, 2019.
And you had
20 months ago tomorrow.
You had plans for a 40th anniversary tour and everything, didn't we?
Yeah, actually, we had a plan to get the original lineup to just at least do one gig together. And that was booked into our favourite place, the Cavern in Wimbledon.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, Baz was so ill that he pulled out, and I didn't want to deal with another bass player. The idea was to have the original four members, and of course he couldn't do it, then that was the end of that. But we were going to do a 40th anniversary tour with the new lineup, and include all the songs from like 1980 straight through.
And also, just checking on some things. I've been stalking you on the social media like you do, and I couldn't help but notice that you've been doing something with Sven's. Is it Danny and Sven's now?
Well, that's started with a guy I met over here, Robert May. I met him about 6-7 years ago, and we became really good friends. He's in a band called Captain Blackbeard and Nighthawk and Metalite, actually three bands. His main band is Captain Blackbeard. And he's always asking me, let's do something. So he was having a launch party 3 years ago for Captain Blackbeard album. And he said, why don't you come and do the opening act? I said, well, I haven't got a band. And he said, I'll get you the band. So he played bass, got a guy called Andreas Vestelan on drums.
Yeah.
And Pontus Snob on guitar. So I had three Swedes. So I said, well, what name are we going by? He said, let's call it Danny Hines and Friends. I said, let's call it Danny Hines and Sven. The three Swedish guys. So we just done a couple of Weapon songs, some covers, and had a real good fun. And then Robert said, no, we can do some more. So we've done a couple of gigs together. And then last year he said, well, don't we try and do some recording? And again, well, we don't have a band. I get the band. So we started recording in May. So we recorded 11 tracks, three covers and eight originals, and they go out under the name of Danny Hines and his Friends sometime soon.
Oh, excellent.
I'm almost finished.
And I've seen you've been recording, and you've even got young Elliot as well involved in the rock and roll as well.
Well, I got him to do a little, it's a track called Give It Up, and I got him to do a little chant on that with the rest of the guys. He was a little bit shy until he got in there, and then he gave it some. it's sounding good. I mean, I was supposed to finish it yesterday, and I was like 10 minutes from the studio and got a call from the engineer that there's a power failure in the area.
Yeah.
So I had to cancel it. So I'll go in on Monday and finish the last four vocals, and hopefully get it out in the next few months.
And what's it like? What's it like then getting these? I mean, because people can get hold of these bootlegs, you know, at the No Peace Till Hammersmith. Where can they get them? And what's it like again? Listening, going back too many years than we care to remember to listen to them.
It was really weird, very very weird. Because as I said earlier, you know, we sound almost like a punk band. We're playing so fast and the energy. It's not, I have to point out, it's not a professional recording. It hasn't been done on 24 track.
Yeah.
It's recorded on a cassette machine from the desk. Well, one is from the desk, you know, I don't know where it came from.
From the bar.
But it's there, it's live, you know. So what I did, I had, in Sweden, a guy digitize it for me, and another guy's mastered it. And we're putting it out in vinyl because that's what it should have come out on the day. A limited edition, and that will be available from next Friday, 25th. Yeah, but you can get it through the Weapon web shop at www.weapon-call.uk. I have to keep using .com.
Yeah, weapon-uk.com. I'm looking at the moment. How's that?
Yeah. Well, I have to use that bloody UK because we had some trouble with the name. Another story.
Another story. It's all stories. Yeah. Danny, and I look forward to hopefully catching up with you. It's a brilliant story. It's been absolutely marvellous to speak to you. If people want to find out more about you and the band themselves, I know there's weapon-uk.com. Is that the best place to go to find you guys?
On Facebook. My own page, and then we've got the Weapon page. We're everywhere and nowhere, baby.
Yeah, everywhere and nowhere. But look out for that. Check out Weapon and Danny Hines. That's H-Y-N-E-S. Danny, it's been an absolute pleasure to be in contact with you. I'm going to play out with Ghosts of War because that's a hell of a track as well.
Excellent. Thank you so much, guys. And catch you on the road someday.
Well, I hope so indeed. Stay strong, stay safe. Danny Hines,
thank you. Or on a beach in Marbella.
Or on a beach in Marbella. What could possibly go wrong? Danny Hines, thanks for your time today.
Cheers, guys. Bye-bye.